Podcasts are an independent way for podcasters like me to bring a local voice to your ears. At the Spent the Rent podcast, we strive to raise awareness of topics that affect the often underrepresented. Our title sponsor, Oregon Cash Flow Pro, offers free money management advice that can help you take control of your finances. At OregonCashflowPro.com, you will find videos to guide you towards your goal of financial freedom. For more info, there will be a link in the show notes. The following podcast is available on all major streaming sites, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and more. You can now listen to all previous episodes, donate to the podcast, and buy shirts directly from the Spent the Rent podcast at our newly designed official website, strpod.com. Welcome to the Spent the Rent podcast. I am your host, Patty Rose. My guest today is former Lane County Commissioner Joe Burney. Joe, welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir.
You're cool if I call you Joe, right?
Yeah, you're cool if I call you sir, right?
I guess that's how it goes, yeah. Thank you so much for doing this. We were talking right before we hit record, and this is your first formal interview since you left office. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
What an honor for the Spent the Rent podcast. This is why I created this, was, I started this to share stories of the underrepresented in Lane County, but I started to feel like Springfield is underrepresented, period. So even the Lane County commissioner, even an established really high up position,
Springfield isn't underrepresented. The people that don't have a ton of money or corporate interests in Springfield are underrepresented, as is the case across the county, across the state, across the nation.
Right. And that's why I wanted to have you on. That's why I continue to have you on. I had you on, you were my first ever live stream for a video, and I totally botched some of the audio. I had some echo on your voice, but hey, live and learn. But I wanted to have you back on. We were going to talk about what you've been up to since the election last November. You've had some health stuff that we're going to talk a little bit about. But it's a true treat to be able to chat with you, and that we've become friends behind the scene, and I really appreciate it. And so, yeah, thanks for being here.
Are you kidding? I am the richer for it.
Yeah. So let's just get right into it. First, I wanted to have you reflect on your time in office, you know, talk about some of the things that you accomplished that you're proud of, and then some of the things that you wanted to accomplish but couldn't. And so let's start with that.
Well, you got to remember, I came into office after defeating a candidate that never showed up. It's kind of come full circle. Anyway.
Right.
And we kicked ass. So what I'm proud of the fact that not only was I literally able to save the 80 plus families that lived in the Patrician Mobile Home Park in Springfield from being evicted, as the owner wanted to sell it to a large developer. And I'm proud that we developed a template for how the state of Oregon can allow residents of manufactured home parks purchase their properties, have assistance in managing their properties, et cetera. So feel good about that. Feel super good about the community benefits agreement, because for me, I ran on, hey, Springfield and the county, we need living wages. We need an inclusive recruitment process to bring people who have not been represented in a lot of the building trade professions into the professions. That was a little prophetic because we have such a shortage now,
right?
I mean, we all are feeling that. The people that just wanted to be able to buy a house, support a family, send kids to college, et cetera. And the community benefits agreement, which I piloted in Lane County. I mean, I had to sell it. I had to get other county commissioners to agree. But what it did was, I was told by staff, it liberated them to do the things they believed in, which is why they went into public service in the first place.
Right.
So we really went to town there. We developed set-aside programs so that women and minority contractors could also, local contractors that hired local people for local jobs in the community. We prioritized that. We prioritized health insurance for every worker on a county construction job over $500,000 had to be bound by health insurance and retirement. And what that did, it was very interesting. I hope you don't mind my getting into it.
No, that's what we're here for.
What that did was, it redirected tens of millions of dollars from contractors out of the county to contractors in the county.
That's huge.
From people that were hiring folks that were travelers in the building trades from out of Lane County to forcing hires in Lane County.
Is that the same bill that we had talked about before that you worked on with James Manning?
Well, yes. However, we had to do it in Lane County first to demonstrate it worked. Then with Senator Manning, very proud of the fact, and I was told that this was impossible, but very proud of the fact that we created state law. We got it passed 2 years ago, and that state law, for the first time in the history of Oregon, allows contracts to be let not just to the lowest bidder, who oftentimes is going to cut a lot of those things we're talking about, but based upon the benefits that accrue to the community in the ways that we were just talking about. So feel really good about that, right?
Right.
I mean, and so, I didn't go there to watch.
The big thing in that is that it gives the workers protections, right? So like, if I understand it right, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but when there's at the state level, we'll say that, if there's a state job that's contracted out, the contracted out company has to provide the same type of benefits. Is that the same? We're talking about the same bill?
We're talking kind of. It puts standards that help workers into the category of benefiting the community.
Yeah.
Because local hires and local contracts to local businesses do benefit a community. So the fact that Senate Bill 420, I hate that number, passed, which was my community benefits agreement that we demonstrated in Lane County, that allows any city, any county, any school district, any public entity in the state to do the same thing. And we now have 14 that are using that. And by the end of the next 12 months, because I'm working with the building trades and with school districts for some of the infrastructure money, I expect we'll have about 100 public entities in the state of Oregon using the community benefits agreement. You know, I was honored to conceive of and introduce here in Lane County.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
one of the things, you know, that, I mean, for me, I've covered it ad nauseum on the podcast, the work that you did alongside Heather Buck, you know, after the Holiday Farms fire and that kind of stuff, you guys were on point. And so everything that I've got a connection, I've talked about it a lot, upriver, my stepsons, their dad lives up to McKenzie. So they went to high school up there for the first 2 years. So that when that happened, we knew when the fire happened, we knew so many people that lost everything. And it's a great community up there. And one of the things that I heard from everybody was Peter DeFazio, how Peter DeFazio was there. Just he showed up, you know. And so you three are the ones that, you know, you, Heather Buck, Peter DeFazio are the ones that really, really showed up for the Holiday Farms fire recovery efforts. And I want to thank you for the work you put in on that.
Well, are you kidding? But that's part of being a county commissioner. You show up, right?
Yeah.
It was an honor to do that after I turned 65, you know, for my gig. But speaking about that, a few things. One, the staging area for all of the fire departments that came for the Holiday Farm fire was Thurston Middle School.
Yeah.
So it was really cool because I was and Thurston Middle School is 10 minutes from my house, right? It's, what is it, 5 minutes from your house?
Right.
So so I was there a lot, and I was there in Heather's behalf because it's very far from her place. And the first time I've been there since that was a week ago when I saw my granddaughter who goes to Thurston Middle School in their orchestra recital last week. So it was pretty cool.
Come full circle. It's nice to see kind of some normalcy too after that. 2020 was rough in many ways. I mean, staging center, staging area. I would take my dog to the dog park and see tents and people set up in the firefighters were literally like sleeping in a field.
Dude,
you know?
2020 and then 2021.
Oh yeah.
Two of the years that I was county commissioner. Those years sucked. I mean, think about it. I was elected chair of the Board of Commissioners the day on January 5th, 2021. On January 6th was the insurrection in D.C.
Right.
All hell broke loose.
Sure.
And it was a job, but we navigated it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So now talk up a little bit about what you wish you would have been able to.
If I may.
Yeah.
The other thing that I was very proud of, because I was the guy that led this stuff. Fortunately, we had the rest of the votes, but it was a job-creating, business-friendly climate action initiative for the county. County never had one, ever. And that's going to lead to some areas I wish, you know, we could have accomplished and didn't. But we did that. We put that together. And the reason we put that together was my first meeting away from the board with board commissioners. I said, what's the carbon footprint of Lane County? Just curious. No one could answer.
Right.
No staff, no commissioners. No one knew what the hell it was. So that started a year-long process where the county assessed its carbon initiative. I mean, its carbon footprint using experts. That was used to develop a climate action plan. That climate action plan now continues to into the operations of the county in smart ways, not ways that kill any jobs, make us a cleaner county. And I always pushed for, we need to, if you don't know where you're going, anyone can lead you there. So how about we talk about a net zero Lane County, and that's where we're going to be moving to.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt.
No. So is that the area you want to, you know, as far as an area that, I mean, obviously having been unsuccessful in your last election run.
Well, I didn't run. I was in the hospital the last 6 weeks.
We'll get into that. But just the goal was for you to have continued to stay in office, right? So
my goal was to be a one-term county commissioner.
Right.
I and others felt that the person who was also running was so out there, and was so potentially negative, that I acquiesced and ran again was going for a second term.
Yeah.
But I'm 70 now, and you know, initially it was a one term.
Almost old enough to be president. but I'm gonna get some ads for that one.
Almost old enough to be president.
So
that's pretty good.
You know, it was a tough race. So let's talk about that right now. Let's talk a little bit about what you were dealing with during the campaign. So you had just said,
but you know, you asked some things that didn't happen.
Oh yeah, let's talk about that. I mean, I just want to hear
I'll just give you one example.
Sure.
Because you have to be really, really smart as a county commissioner. You got to be able to count to three. And one thing I could never get to three on was setting aside dollars that the county wouldn't have even administer, dollars to support home builders building starter homes. We don't even hear about starter homes anymore, right? I mean, what's a starter home? I'm not talking about a Conestoga tent or a 10 by 10 thing. I'm talking about a home that a family can live in where there's grass in the backyard and kids can play. And we were talking about how if we set aside dollars, had local savings and loans that loan money to home buyers anyway, manage the dollars, provide a down payment assistance to first-time home buyers that were residents of the county, provide 0% loans to home builders while they were building the home, and then requiring them to refinance it commercially, which would have been business for the banks,
right,
business for the SNLs, business for title companies, estimators, business in the local economy, we could have built over 2,000 homes with $150 million bond, and recycled that money for over, I forget the number, but it would have been thousands of homes over a 10-year period.
Wow.
That didn't go anywhere, and I'm disappointed. Things that didn't go anywhere, when the fires, you know, you talk about Blue River, I was demonstrating how through my previous business, you could create a net zero community, get rid of transmission lines that go through trees and cause fires,
right,
for a lot less, generate the energy locally, have local people own the energy that they're generating, and Blue River and some of those communities upriver would have been perfect to do that. But no. People in government, whether it's here or at the state level especially, weren't that creative, didn't understand how to do it. And it was frustrating because that would have been so much better of an alternative. But
yeah,
anyway,
as far as building homes, I mean, it's a sad thing that didn't get done, because, you know, that's one of the best ways that we can combat homelessness is by having more places for people to live.
Well, it's places that are affordable,
right,
where you're getting people in, that are incentives for the work ethic, for people to work and support themselves and have some pride in the, Yeah, it's a damn shame. But yeah, that's part of the culture too.
Yeah, I mean, everyone wants to assess the problem, but not actually come up with any type of solution. So,
sorry to interrupt you.
No, yeah. You're good. So let's talk a little bit about what you were dealing with during the campaign. You had talked about how, your opponent stepping up and deciding to run is what made you kind of decide that you had to. You're like, I got to stay in this thing.
Yep.
But then, you know, you dealt with some pretty heavy health stuff, and so is it okay? Is it okay yeah, to ask
I'd,
about?
I mean, I'd
after
say so.
After everything, like you had said, after going through all the stuff through 2020, then you had some issues with your health, and maybe you can talk on that and talk about exactly what you were dealing with, especially towards the second half of your campaign.
Okay. Well, not to bore your audience, but actually I'm not 70. I'll be 70 in a month and a half, but I have had insulin dependent diabetes for 61 years. When I got it, the therapies were so primitive compared to managing the condition today. I was given a 0% chance to see past the age of 25, a 0% chance to live past the age of 30.
Wow.
So on the one hand, I feel incredibly blessed and fortunate. I've dodged a lot of bullets. The last 6 weeks of the campaign, it was 2022. Yeah, it was May of 2022. I was in the hospital more than I was out of it. Diabetes is a neurological disease also. And long story short, I ended up having to have one toe amputated and then another toe amputated.
Wow.
I was not allowed to walk.
Different feet or the same foot?
Different feet.
Different feet.
And for the benefit of you all, I walked up to Patrick's house here. So
right.
I'm getting better. Yeah. But I was not allowed to canvass. I was not allowed to campaign. So the last 6 weeks, I wasn't even in the race. So that was the health thing. And that's the only reason that I'm not a county commissioner now, which is, trust me, my wife's happier. I'm healthier.
Sure.
I'm happier. But that was a campaign where there were about 15,000 more or less votes. And 100 decided it.
I thought it came down to like 29.
It was a real low number.
And then I've heard 29.
Okay.
Because legally, and this is, you know, legally you can go back through this and make sure that the signatures match. Like the parties, both sides can go back through and you can make sure that if a vote is not going to be counted, you're like, well, this signature doesn't match this. Let's send it back to the voter. And there's some time for them to make sure that every vote gets counted accurately and whatnot. But yeah.
Well, you know the number then. So it was like that much.
Yeah.
That much.
Razor thin.
Which to me, that was such a fulfilling thing because I wasn't even in it. I couldn't be a part of it the last 6 weeks. Nobody wins an election if they can't campaign.
No.
So, in fact, if I may, for my neighbors and friends here in Springfield and in the county, that meant so much, and that was a very fulfilling and touching moment for me because that was just a level of support I did not anticipate. But that was the health thing. That's what happened.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a
and
tough race.
Dealing with the meanness of...
Well, and you had, you know, you were dealing with running against someone that had so much out-of-state money coming in.
I
mean, insane amounts coming in for Lane County Commissioner, I can understand why there'd be some outside interest and why, but I don't understand why Springfield City Council was getting a lot of outside money, you know? And I don't get how that is something that,
I mean, I didn't know that was happening. Is that happening?
I mean, there's just a lot of, you saw the your race had the most, I mean, it's obvious from the signage and all that stuff, but there's just a lot of push this last time around, from the conservative side, you know, outside of the area to get their hands on basically controlling the taxes, probably. I don't know.
Yeah.
So now one of the things that you do know, I mean, being that you did hold office on Lane County Commissioner, I think that you have had more of a right in your face about what the future of Lane County looks like. You have, you know exactly what we're looking at. I wanted to talk a little bit about the future of Lane County. And the three main areas that I see are the biggest issues, and maybe you can tell me what you think they are. But the three biggest areas, I think it's obvious to me, is homelessness and then affordable housing, which kind of goes hand in hand, but I don't think it's, well, we, it's the same.
We've been talking
and
about
we talked about that. And living wage jobs, which you you mentioned, you know,
I'd say,
you know, that's something, living wage jobs are something that, you know, I want to, I'm not trying to throw him under the bus, but I talked to Alan Stout last episode or two weeks ago, and he was great. It was a great conversation, but this is where I'm going to disagree with. When people, the answer to housing or the answer to homelessness is like, okay, businesses can put people on their property, you know, or the answer.
Is that what he said?
He's businesses like, that's one
can
way.
Put people on their property.
Well, he didn't say it like exactly like that, but, okay. But he said, you know, we could pass it to where they could have open it up, to where people could, you'd have one person or whatever could stay on an empty or like a industrial lot and say rezone for that. And I'm like, this isn't fixing the problem. Yeah. It's the problem.
Yeah. I wouldn't go like this. It's okay.
Yeah. And, yeah. And so point, I'm not trying to throw them under the bus. It's just that ideology I think is so short-sighted when people are trying to, think about solutions for housing and they think about like one or two or three people at a time, you know, and it's just like, that's not the answer. And you cannot just say like, oh, we'll just create jobs and that'll fix the problem. Because a lot of the people that are finding themselves homeless are either mentally unstable. Some of them are on drugs, a good amount, you know, are using drugs, which is a combination of mental health and drug addiction. They go hand in hand. The chicken and the egg thing, like what came first?
And jail population.
Right. And so, and that's the other end of it, is that people's answer to homelessness is that they want to over-police it. They want a heavy hand of policing. They're like, screw that. We'll just make their lives hell until they leave. And it's like, what people don't understand is you're making it harder for them to get back into the workforce. You're making it harder for them to stay in their home because you're, you know, if all you're doing is policing, you're not rehabilitating anything, you know, that, but I wanted to hear what you had to say about the future of Lane County, and what you, you know, some things that you're optimistic about, some things that maybe not so much.
Well, I have trouble separating the future of Lane County from the future of Oregon, from the future of the United States, from the future. I mean, this world we're living in is, I've been able to watch a little more TV than when I was a county commissioner, and we're watching the sixth extinction with over 70% of plant and animal life as we know it is saying goodbye. We're seeing an economy that's absolutely being flooded with printed money and debt for the country at such an astronomical level. And that burden is placed on us and our children and our grandchildren. And I've got all three generations there, you know, so I'm watching that happen. So consequently, national policy really impacts it. And then the other issue is corporations. I mean, think about it. Corporations have rights, but nature doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you take a wider view of history now, and we're able to, and we see that natural law and nature is contributes so much to even human history, and especially at this particular moment, we really can't separate the notion of full employment from the notion of environmental sustainability. So as you look at housing in that context, my issue with the state and county government is they're very myopic. Let's get money and let's build, you know, let's get it to nonprofits and we'll give them each five Conestoga huts and we're going to let them do this, or let's let a business let three people park their cars. This is nonsense. That we need to be talking about, how do we provide people a sense of hope and dignity and meaning and a feeling of competence and belongingness to the community? And you don't do that by creating a system of those that are hoarding dollars and those that have no sense of hope that no matter how hard they work, they've got no future.
Yeah.
So in that context, when we look at housing, I think it's critical to start looking at what are the economics of being smart about, one, yeah, you create shelter. And what are the demographics of the homeless population in the county? One of my children was a Springfield police officer for several years. And he really believes that the demographics of the homeless population in Lane County are largely non-Lane County residents. So
I've heard different things, yeah.
You know, so all these, and in Springfield, a lot of the services for the homeless are in Eugene. So the Springfield cops will direct people to the closest service, but it's not here. So you get this whole mix of things, and no one's developing pragmatic solutions for how do we generate many more homes? How do we make them more affordable? How do we make it environmentally sustainable? And it's doable. And nobody thinks that way in government that I met. They think, oh, we got this much money. We can do this with it. Hurry up. That'll make us look good to our constituents.
Right.
You know, and it's like, bullshit. We got to solve this problem.
Right. And and it's going to continue to get worse if you just slap a Band-Aid on it. Now, I
got to say, homelessness is good politics for aspiring politicians.
Yeah.
Right. That so far, those are the only people I can see that benefit from homelessness.
That's a fact. And that is a tough thing that it's like, do you want the problem to be solved? You know, that's the benefit for the opposition party, which in Oregon is the Republican Party. That is the benefit that they have of not ever having the majority, is that they never actually have to take any responsibility for not doing anything it's like, I remember I saw a meme with John Boehner, who at the time was Speaker of the House. And it said, we've tried nothing and we're all out of ideas. and that is the benefit of being the opposition party in the minority, where you don't actually have to take responsibility for not doing anything, which they never do. So anyway,
you know, I think, forgive me, Patrick, but I think we got to get away from this two party. Us against them.
I agree.
So, and I know you just said, but you know, people are people.
Yeah.
When we saved the patrician, we didn't go around and take a poll and see who was a Republican, who was a Democrat. We were trying to help people. You know, there's not a Republican or a Democrat way of fixing a pothole.
Yeah. Well, and I want to be clear when I say this, though.
I ran across a few coming here.
Right. But I will say that. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, you're fine.
The point I want to make is there's truth to what you're saying, and there's truth to the criticisms of the Democratic Party. We all have truths and we need to listen to each other. I think we're at a post two-party solution to get us out of here. And we need to start being real about what unites us and what we have in common, which is far more than what divides us, and stop talking politics and start talking solutions, because I'm sick of it. We have a 2-year campaign cycle now for president. It's like, I don't give a crap. Let's deal with the things that we need to deal with here locally.
And when I say Republicans, I am referring to the politicians that are just trying to politicize everything. That, because the voters themselves, I have a ton of people that I admire that have a different viewpoint on things.
Right.
And it's all about perspectives. It's all about hearing each other's perspectives and kind of taking little bits and pieces of all of it to kind of find what's going to work the best for the most of us, or for more people. But there's an actual strategy in not letting things work
right
by government. And when I say Republicans, that's what I'm referring to. Yeah. And so, you know, we saw it with Obamacare, where they're like constantly trying to cut parts of it. So they're like, if we can do this, then it won't be effective. And then we can say it was a failure. And it's like, you made it a failure.
Right.
And it's not a failure, actually. The ACA has been successful. I mean,
right. But, no, absolutely. My concern, and often people do, sadly, today's Republican Party is not, when
it's
I
not
was
your
younger,
father's Republican
yeah, it's not
Party.
My father's Republican Party.
Right.
And sadly, I think what we ought to be talking about is we can't have small-minded and mean-spirited people
In office. I 100% agree.
And that
goes across the board.
That's one of the reasons I ran too.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, we really need to have bigger-minded, compassionate, caring people in office. And I don't give a crap what the campaign jargon is.
I agree. I completely agree. And I was talking about a disapproval rating, especially at the president. You know, it's like if if we're going to keep the two parties, which we, that's a whole different conversation.
I don't see a way out right
yeah,
now.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. you know, we could talk about star voting and all that kind of stuff.
Well, ranked choice. Yeah. I mean, I think that holds a lot of promise.
And maybe we should talk about that in a second, but if we're going to keep with the two party system, I would jokingly had said in the past, maybe we need a disapproval rating, which would basically be like, we're going to all the people in the opposition party vote in the primary for the other candidates. And if you get a certain disapproval, you're out, you know, but
yeah,
at the same time, yeah, we could be here forever. Star voting is something that I have talked about a bunch on the show, and they're pushing. I definitely recommend anybody listening to Google star voting, because we need to push for that locally so that it can expand, so that we can be the model for the country. But Alaska's doing ranked choice voting.
Yeah, ranked choice is the answer.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Sure. I think it's a little bit, you know, it's confusing to some. I like star voting. In the way that you score each person, it's STAR is an acronym that stands for score, then automatic runoff. And so you would vote, but for each candidate, and you give them a rating 0 through 5. And if you don't want to do it, then you can just rate the one person that you want to vote for 5. And so I kind of like that.
I think there's lots of ways to get away from the divisiveness of us versus them.
Right.
And that's probably a way.
Yeah. So, one of the races that's coming up, this is an off year for the main elections, and so what we're going to be voting on in May is the school board. The school board races, school boards across the country are in a really tumultuous time. Yeah. I mean, it's wild across the board. You've got Florida is making a ton of headlines with DeSantis, who hasn't announced officially that he's running for president, but it's pretty clear that him and Trump will be duking it out for the Republican nomination. So he, you know, they are really steadfast in making sure that anything that he doesn't like is called woke. And, you know, so I don't think that it's completely without merit. How do I word this? Some of the stuff that they're talking about does need to be addressed. We saw in Eugene that there was that 4J sex education class. Did you hear about this?
Yep.
It's pretty questionable.
And I'm tired of reading about how the 4J school board members are dysfunctional, arguing over everything.
They're having, the 4J school board is a...
It's about the kids, not the board members.
Yeah, it's about the kids. That's really what it comes down to. And there's some good people on that board individually, but as a whole right now, it's just a lot of infighting. And, you know, you get good people that aren't wanting to continue sitting in office because there's people that...
And then you've got our school board in Springfield that just acquiesce to the superintendent and don't stand up and say, yeah, wait a minute, this is important for our children.
Yeah.
And we don't know what's happening. I don't know what's happening with the Springfield school board. It's the most opaque. But anyway.
No, yeah, that's what I wanted to talk
ahead
about.
Yeah,
sorry. Yeah, so, I mean, with the school board race, I do want to give a shout out to Anthony Reed. He ran last time. And he was so new to the scene, and he was really pushing for vocational training in schools and has a lot of, you had talked earlier about, people getting creative in government, you know, and that's something that I think Anthony's great about. I'll be, you know, talking about him. We're going to have him on the podcast again, and we're going to talk about what he learned from the last run. I think this time he's going to get on there, but Anthony's the kind of people that we need in office because of the fact that he's passionate about the kids. Like, that's what he cares about.
Well, he has kids in the school district.
In the school district.
Yeah. You know, I think that should be prerequisite.
And his experience, I think, you know, one of his kids has special needs, which also adds another element of his experience to where he...
One of my grandkids right here.
Yeah. In Springfield, and that is a really, really important thing because that's a group that often gets overlooked. And so Anthony's just a great candidate. So look forward to when I have him on again. And so, you know, there's good people in Springfield City Government or Springfield School Board. I had Zach Bassett on back when him and I grew up together. And so it was so funny to me that he ran unopposed. And then, you know, 2020 he came and he's like, this is terrible. I'm out, you know, but hey, he still served and did his time, But yeah, the school board races. Do you have any big thoughts on what you've been hearing about that yet? Have you dove in yet? It's a little early for me to kind of have totally digested what the race is all about. But
well, for 10 years, I was on the ESD school board. So I know, and it was one of the most boring volunteer things I've ever done, being on a school board.
That's a fact.
I was a tenured teacher at one point. This is how old I am. some of my ex-high school students are now past 60.
So, right.
I've done a lot of stuff in education. I'm giving you a context for my...
Sure.
I created with Paul Plath, superintendent of Springfield, Margaret Nichols of 4J, and Kent Hunsicker of Bethel in the early 90s, Networking for Youth, which was all about networking to create work opportunities locally for your local young people. And we had a mentor program. And one of the people I mentored is a Springfield resident with three kids older than you. And I created the roadmap of School to Work, which brought $7 million into Lane County in the mid-90s. So I've got a little experience here. And I would say that, one, the Springfield community needs to know what the hell is going on with the Springfield School Board, because it's not our fault that we're not informed. There's no news. There's no, we don't know what's right. happening. I mean, I know what happened at my granddaughter's orchestra recital or the classes I've, but other than that,
sure.
My own personal opinion, our local school district needs to be much more welcome to members of the community that are not educators.
And then, you know, it's tough right now. Not that I disagree, but it's tough because you have people that are creating false narratives. You know, there's a lot of aggression towards people in school board seats right now.
Well, I'm talking about the schools. And the school board members need to deal with a policy. They need to say, hey, superintendent, in 2 years, we want X percent of our young people to be reading at this level and to be able to have access to a mentor or to a tutor from the community. That's what a school board does. They do policy. It's the district that implements the policy. So I think our school board, the district needs to be more transparent, and it's the board's responsibility to make policy that makes that so.
Yeah.
So we know how our kids are doing. I think I was very critical of high-stakes standardized tests 20 years ago. I think we've gone the other direction, and we need to have some input that's not punitive that can help teachers and students see how they're doing so that they can improve. It's somewhere in the middle.
Right.
I think that there is a you and I were talking about this earlier. There's a reckoning coming with artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
And it's going to change everything.
Yeah.
Do students, are they really going to need to construct a paragraph? Are they really going to need to understand sentence structure or algebraic equations? What are they going to need? What are the jobs of the future going to look like and demand?
Yeah.
So I think that our school board members need to, it sounds sexist, I don't mean this gender specific, but in my day, man up, you know?
Sure.
Need to stand up, assume their proper role, which is they should represent our community interests and direct the superintendent on what the goals should be. We need to have a more transparent school district. Our kids, especially after COVID, need a ton more assistance.
Absolutely.
And we need to start talking about what the future looks like and what our students really need to learn. And, you know, I'm someone who I've always believed that public schools represent the greatest potential human resource development agency in every community. And the development of our human resource base needs to match where jobs are and where they're projected to be. I don't think we're doing a good enough job with that.
Mm-hmm.
Conversely, that's not why schools were formed. Public schools were formed to create enlightened and informed citizens. And that's another critical
role. Equity, you know, and it's about equity.
What's equity?
I mean, making sure that there's an equal opportunity across the board. I mean, wouldn't that be... it's making sure it's making sure that the opportunities that are afforded to this group are also afforded to this group.
Absolutely. And so we need to talk about my opinion, right? I'm not trying to.
No, you're good.
Equal opportunity, not equal results, not equal outcomes, but equal opportunity.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right. And then, you know.
And public education is the last vestige of a public commitment to equal opportunity.
And, you know, there's a lot of people. The Art Robinsons of the world that want to, that's what his whole moneymaker was, I believe, homeschooling kits and whatnot. You know, so there's a lot of people that don't want there to be public school, and there's talks about voucher programs. And in rural communities, right.
This
those
has been
are
the
difficult
case for
conversations.
Decades.
Yeah, yeah. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
One of the things that the school board is doing that we had talked off air, and you had a different take that, again, this is why it's great to have these conversations, because I was excited about this because I'm a barber. So the Springfield School District is adding cosmetology training. It sounds like, and this is a new thing, so I could be getting some of this wrong, but it sounds like there's going to be 15 kids either a term or per year that are going to be able to get out of school with a license in cosmetology, which is great. I love it because it's been a great career for me. I'm a big fan of vocational training and for people to really not, college isn't for everybody, right?
Didn't you and one of my kids work at the same barbershop once?
Holly, yes. she was the receptionist at a place that I worked at.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, it's funny. It's a small world.
Yeah.
But you know, you had said something I didn't even think about. You were like, well, 15 kids. Well, what does that really do? And I'm like,
it's great for the 15 kids.
But what about the 16th kid? You know, like
what about the other thousands of kids?
Yeah. And so I think that's really, it's an unfortunate, it's a small number, you know? And so it's a cool thing, you know?
So future Springfield school board members, here's what you do. You direct your superintendent within 2 years to create a situation where 50% of all the juniors and seniors in the Springfield public schools have a 2+2 program, where the last 2 years of high school can become combined with the first 2 years of a vocational program, a community college program, get credits both towards graduation from high school and acquiring the skills in the pre-apprentice or apprenticeship program or what have you. And let's talk not about 15 kids, which is awesome.
It is awesome. I mean,
let's talk about 1,000 kids.
Yeah.
And you know,
I thought it was really cool. We were talking and you had said that, and even though it, like, you know, I don't want to stomp on your parade kind of deal. And it's, it okay. wasn't that.
My parade's been stomped on before.
No, you were saying it to me because you were like, it's cool. But my thoughts were, you know, that's not enough people. And I think that's really a good thing to understand. It's like, these are incremental changes. You know what I'm saying? But I'm still excited because as a barber, the reason I went to barber school was because I couldn't go to college because I couldn't get assistance because my parents were divorced. I wasn't a great student in high school because I was a slacker skater kid, but I graduated, could have gone to Lane. But had I done that, I would have had to pay 100% out of pocket. Because in those days, if your parents are divorced, they factored in both parents' incomes.
And 2+2, you should pay nothing.
Yeah. And I would get no help. And so I thought, maybe I'll get into this trade 5 years, then I'll go back to school. Fast forward 5 years. And I was like, I'm kind of liking what I'm doing. I don't really want to go back. Here I am 20 years later, and it's been incredible for me. The reason that I'm even able to do this podcast is because of the communication skills that I've built by being a barber. You know, like, they go hand in hand because I've met people from all across every walk of life. I work on campus with International. So, I mean, it's just a beautiful thing to be part of the
community.
Can I
give you a compliment?
Yeah, please.
In front of all your viewers?
Please, yeah.
So we're sitting in your home, which you and the bank own.
Right.
In your studio, which is just,
it's coming
killer.
Together.
It's very nice. You're getting a feeling of pride.
Yeah.
And your belongingness to the community and these are the things we all need. And it just gets back to what I was saying, but dude, you exemplify exactly what I've been trying to talk
Thank
about.
Thank you. Yeah. And hey, that's a good segue into, if you're listening and you want to support the podcast, you can go to strpod.com, become a monthly sponsor, or make a one-time donation. There's a few different ways to do it. And it's huge when people help out. That's how I get to grow this thing.
Well, you know, you talk about cosmetology and things are incremental. Well, sometimes change can turn on a dime.
Yeah.
And I've seen us go from where most high schools had construction tech and auto tech classes built into the curriculum for young people that wanted that. I guarantee you construction tech and auto tech would look different now than they did then.
Sure.
But they've largely been dismantled. Now, I was speaking to a group of teachers at Bend this fall, and there are several high schools there that are putting auto tech back in. But guess what they're teaching the young people how to do? How to repair EV electric vehicles, how to convert normal vehicles to electric vehicles, wow. how to work on hybrid engines with
that. That's good.
This is the jobs of the future.
Yeah.
The jobs are there. We need education lags so far behind of where we are now, much less where we're going to be, that it concerns me a great deal.
Yeah, that's good. So, yeah, pay attention in the next coming weeks about the school board races. There's some questionable people that have thrown their names in the hat, and I'll just leave it at that for today. But we'll be talking about it later, you know, some of the candidates.
School board is critical.
It's very,
thank you for interviewing people.
Yeah, I'm going to have Anthony on, and I'm going to try to see what I can do about reaching out to some of the 4J people as well. But I've been really steadfast on covering Springfield stuff, and there's enough people to cover Eugene. But we kind of touched on this before, but our last topic, you know, what do we do about the division in the country? I mean, we did say it, but I just wanted to say, like, what's frustrating that I see is any proposal of change or any investment into the futures of both marginalized groups and economically disenfranchised individuals and families, it's received with calls of socialism. Like, anytime you try to make any type of positive change, people are like, socialism, socialism.
I think the people that are trying to advance their political careers are at fault.
Yeah.
Combined with the fact that the fourth house of government doesn't, which is journalism and investigative journalism, is not happening at the local level, so people are informed. Well, if you aren't informed and you don't know the truth, then speaking truth to power is meaningless.
Yeah.
So we're in a tough situation when we just have to rebuild.
Yeah. And it's,
but you know, I think we have to be conscious too. Like, Patrick, even you were saying, well, the Republicans, this, the Republic. Well, that generates that divisiveness.
I agree.
So what I did in 4 years was I worked hard and I loved my work. And I feel exceedingly gratified. And in fact, the county administrator told me that I accomplished more than any county commissioner he's worked with in three states in his 25-year career.
Wow.
Made me feel good. That didn't do a damn thing as it related to campaigning.
Sure.
And how do people know what the truth is? So
that's key. That's key. And there, and well, that's it where is.
And where, that's public schools too. You have to teach young people how to discern between fact and fiction.
Right. And see, in this... this is always a conversation when I'm doing the podcast, because I'm not a journalist, you know, like I'm doing a form of journalism where we're having conversations, but I don't do the investigative journalism, and I'm not even trying to have both sides. I'm not even lying about that. I'm just having conversations now, meaning I'd love to have conversations with people from different viewpoints. But my point is each episode, I'm not going to be like, and I have a job. I can't do like a documentary every episode, you know? And so I can only do what I can do, but you know, it's just tough. But I do see some hopeful stuff when it comes to the division, just because I know that a lot of people are exhausted with it. But sometimes what that'll do is it just shuts people off and they become apathetic. And that's what we can't have. Is like, we need to have turnout. You know, voter turnout is how you use your voice. And
when turnout and education.
Yeah.
Even the political parties, they don't give a damn about education. No. All they care about is winning.
Right.
Right. And that feeds the divisiveness. We need to start talking about how do we work together to create an environmentally sustainable, full employment, human service, peace economy.
Right.
And what does that mean at the local level? And that's what I did. And that's what we need, more and more and more of those people that go into public life, want to be public servants, not self-servants.
Right.
And that becomes another issue. And well, and money in politics is an issue too.
Absolutely. So, hey, Joe Birney, it's always a treat. It's great to get to know you better, you know, behind the scenes. I appreciate what you've been able to do for our area, not only in office. I mean, you had one term in four years in Lane County Commissioner, but you've also been a huge part of the community for a long time, but you know, beyond that. And I think that that's huge. And I think that it's really neat that I've been able to get to know people like yourself. And Sean Van Gordon is somebody that I always know that I can text message him when we could talk about football, video games, and just random stuff. And that's really cool, because Springfield is really growing and going in a good direction. I don't know if the numbers are blowing up or anything, but you can see the tone changing. It's changed. I mean, Springfield is trending upwards for sure.
I think Springfield is trending upwards, but be wary of, as you look at those that represent us and decisions they are making, and see whether that's helping or not. Regardless of them, we're becoming more diverse. We've got the largest Hispanic population in Lane County.
Wow, I didn't know
in
that.
Our public schools, that's right, followed by the Bethel area.
Yeah.
We have a Springfield more and more for young families and young people, such as you, forgive me, but for such as you.
Sure.
Are moving here because it's more affordable. And yet at the same time, the average price of that, this to me is inconceivable. The average price of a home in Springfield has now hit $400,000.
That is wild.
It's craziness. We do need land for building houses, not just apartments. People do need a sense of pride in ownership, not just renting. There's a lot to do, and we can make it happen whether we're in office or not.
Yeah. Well, Joe Bernie, thank you so much. I want to give a quick shout out before we get out of here. I'm doing something. I'm producing a real estate podcast. Kind of ironic, the Spent the Rent podcast. But a good friend of mine, Vince Casey, has asked me to be the behind the scenes producer of his podcast. So I'm doing that. It's called the Eugene Real Estate Podcast. This one's kind of more for real estate people, you know. It's really the behind the scenes of what goes into that industry. But for me, just to be a fly on the wall is pretty neat, and to learn about it, because I'm somebody that cares passionately about making sure that people can be housed. And so every area that I can learn about, that's really interesting.
So here's a weird one. So the Eugene area realtors endorsed me and gave me a good amount of money. The Springfield area realtors endorsed my opponent and got the state to give him 5 times that amount of money.
Yeah.
You know, so even realtors.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't matter. We're so divided. But
oh, yeah. I talked about that on the podcast. The along came Polly crowd that, anyway.
That's where they interviewed.
Yeah, that was a really, it was an interesting time.
Yeah.
2020 is over. So,
Thank you for allowing me.
You're very welcome. Check out the Eugene Real Estate Podcast with Vince Casey. We're going to be recording episode 2 April 7th. That's everywhere you listen to podcasts. And thank you for listening to the Spent the Rent Podcast. And like I said before, if you'd like to donate to the show, you can go to strpod.com. That's strpod.com. Or you can just go straight on Venmo at Spent the Rent. Joe Bernie, thank you so much.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
We're going to end this with a song. This is a previously unreleased song. This is me, Patty Rose, featuring Gradient with the song Feel of My Skin.
It's time I took a step of crooked wiggle in my hop scoot. It's not cute how the grief has kept me distant from the truth. The therapy I seek is scaring me to the point of isolation as I block out the memories. I'm stuck between these feelings of nothingness. I have a collection of bad intentions, fighting against my better judgment. Fighting against my better judgment. Where were you when I lost my shit? Cause I was done with all of it. Everyone who's on my back needs to relax, y'all hypocrites. Where were you when I lost my shit? Cause I was done with all of it. Everyone who's on my back needs to relax, y'all hypocrites. Skin. Grief is really tricky, it's making me dizzy. I don't know where to begin. When you don't fit in a box, you've had too many trauma talks. You've had your life story repeatedly defeating your stock. Try to floss through your disdain for existence. Call your boss a piss stain for his critique of your attendance. The co-defendants, they don't share the courtroom. No, you a little better when the lights are on. And as a parent, there is only one fear, that there comes a day that your kid is gone.
With resolve, with a song, with a strong middle love, with the whisper of lost ones, hopefully up above. My words wandered, never steadily said. So when I sent you a text, left you on redder than red. My great mistake to be distant was barely better than dead. No vendetta from me, I'd rather forget it instead. I'ma be searching for something beyond it. I'ma be patching up every pothole. The road could lead us back to where I won't have to cry that you're not home. I miss my father's skin. The man within was complicated. But one embrace today erases all the time we wasted.
wasting. I hope one time he makes it. It's not just money chasing. Our bond was paradox, cold fire, sunny basement.
Will you ever miss me? Can you even forget me? Will you miss the feel of my skin? And grief is really tricky, it's making me dizzy. I don't know where to begin. Will you ever miss me? Can you even forget me? Will you miss the feel of my skin? And grief is really tricky, it's making me dizzy. I don't know where to begin.